So you were in Quincy, Illinois, doing special ed,
Yes.
and then you said you left. Where did you go to next?
Let's see. From Quincy, Illinois, I went to Israel.
And why Israel? Because you had learned Hebrew?
I still was remembering what Dr. Krauss had said, that I was a fool in language. I needed to improve how I could express myself in whichever language I was studying. So I thought, I do need it. I do need it. But there were more reasons than that. I'd written to the consulate general in Israel in Chicago, and I'd written him in Hebrew, and he had invited me to his home, and we had had a discussion, and he was telling me the different things that were possibilities. I had also belonged to a little group of a Franciscan priest and Dr. Scher, who was actually a dermatologist but was Jewish, and together, the three of us, we called ourselves a little ecumenical society because I was reared in a congregational church. So we had, Jewish and Catholic and Protestant, and we would study Hebrew together. So I think I just had the idea I would go over there. Also, Sandra Stringer and Jackie King were supposed to come and meet me that year. I mean, we had planned to meet in Israel. But I went, and they didn't. So there I was. But on the plane, I met the two people that had started special ed in Israel, and I volunteered. I went to Hebrew University and studied archaeology under Yaakov Mechehr, the curator of the Israeli Museum. All of these type things. I worked in a kibbutz for the laboring part. Eventually, I did research for that kibbutz and helped to modify it and change it from being agricultural to bring it over to being industrial. So I gave like 10 ideas of what they possibly could develop. One of these things was I had like a compass. You could take a compass and a level and incorporate it, and they would have the abilities to make this on the kibbutz. Now the Israelis decided, yes, this is a great idea, and put it in a tank. A tank. The tank was sewed abroad by the Israelis. One place was the Shah of Iran. So this is what happens from some of my research. But I had other things too to help develop business in Israel. So I would do research from different places in Europe and in the United States on different products. And these were, I decided to take the food products. So then I gave that, and they were able to develop food industry. So, just a little of everything. I taught in Beit Shemesh because after the war in 67, many of the regular teachers were in the service. So I taught in two different schools in Beit Shemesh. I had the special ed as I had before, the same types of children, brain damaged, and then that was 4 hours in the morning. Then I would walk up a hill to another school in which I taught 8th grade, 4 hours, which was Sifrut, which is Hebrew literature. And Hebrew literature is similar to our 9th grade civics, in a sense, because even though there are stories to make you a citizen, So their history and their poetry and their songs and the like. I taught Western music appreciation. So I had Beethoven and also Roll over, Beethoven of the Beatles, you know, or whatever. Roll over, Beethoven, you know. So kind of making it modern and fun for the kids and art. So I did like a variety of things there as well.
You mentioned that you'd got your master's degree at some point. When
yes, I received my master's degree in religious studies at a very late age after my children were fairly well grown, one in college and two in high school. One in high school and one upper elementary. I went back and received a master's in religious studies, and that was a new program. The first time Missouri, I have a tendency to be, I like to be the first time. The first time that a university in Missouri would offer religious studies. Before, people would usually go to the University of Chicago for religious studies. I mean, in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. That was the big school. But at Southwest Missouri State University, which is now Missouri State University, they were able to start this program. And the head of the department called me and actually requested that I come and study there and be master's in one of the first students. After the war in 67, too, the old Hebrew University up above Jerusalem, mm-hmm. I was the first student up there in archaeology to tie Israel with the past, you know, like 2,000 years old history, which was rather political, but nevertheless, they took us up on the old university campus, and it, of course, had been all bombed out and everything. It didn't have any ceiling. There was rubble everywhere and dust and graffiti on the wall. But that's where we would hold our lectures, you know, at first. And then right at the bottom of the hill was the Rockefeller Museum. And I would go there and make sketches of the different things that were found in the museum. And I had a nice sketch notebook. I love art. So I had been able to draw quite easily the different artifacts. When we had our final exam, I remember writing in it, we had different time periods, writing war trophies from the 67 war. And I wrote down the things that I had noticed had disappeared from the Rockefeller Museum. And immediately I ran over to the department and saw them in the Israeli Museum. So I wrote down all the things they had taken from the Rockefeller Museum and drew the pictures just from my memory. And over there, Yaakov Mishraer called me into his office and he said, "How did you know that?" I said, "Because I did exactly like you instructed us. Go to a museum and sketch the artifacts and learn in which periods they appear." And I said, "I noticed very carefully they were there and they weren't there after the war. So where would they be?" And this is the curator of the Israeli Museum. He said, "We had not even presented this fact yet to the Israeli parliament." He said, "Do you realize what you're going to get in this class?" And I said, "Not sure. I hope not prison time. I mean, He said, "Your paper so amazed me." He said, "It so amazed me." He said, "It was better than the PhDs in the class, the PhDs in archaeology." He said, "You are getting an A." I said, "Oh, good, good." But I think it's like you say. Again, I can thank here. Mm-hmm. I can thank here for the background they gave me, that if a professor tells you something and you don't understand it, and you want to tell me, "I didn't understand some of the things that Dr. Krauss wrote on the board," I wrote it down in my notebook. And after I graduated, I took that notebook to Quincy, Illinois with me, and I looked back and I thought, "I am going to understand this." And then I did. I understood all those little symbols and things that he and Rabbi Gittin would really get together and they would just be doing, and they'd just be talking fast and they wouldn't notice us here. But I wrote down everything they put on the board and everything they were talking about. And then I figured it out. So, in a sense, that's what I was doing there, just figuring things out, putting two and two together. Yeah.
Putting the pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
And then how long were you in Israel for then?
I went several times, but the longest stretch was the 67 to 69. I went back after the Yom Kippur War, too, which was in the early 70s.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then always back to the Midwest, always back to where you
were? Oh, yes. I'm a home person with a nomadic spirit.
So there's still a home base.
The home base, I have lived on this farm that was my great-grandfather's, my grandfather's, my father's, and mine now.
And
that's what you call roots.
Yeah. And hopefully one of your children will take over.
Well, I have daughters. Mm-hmm. They are married. I told them they're women, they are liberated, they are free. When I die, everything's to be equal no matter what. But they are to determine what to do. If they want to keep it, they can. If they want to sell it, they can. I'm not going to say anything about my wishes. It's theirs. And if they want to have an auction and sell every single thing in my possession that meant a lot to me, do it. Do it. Mm-hmm. You're free.
Mm-hmm. Right. Just coming back to now that you're back in Fairbanks, you must see great changes in 50 years.
Oh, fabulous. Yeah. Fabulous. I mean, unbelievable. The departments. I just can't explain to you if we had had that back then. You go up and you see neurological science and what they're doing in that, and I can't, the equipment.
The Mary Building is fabulous.
Oh,
yeah,
it is
state of the art.
Yeah. I'm just like, oh, my mouth is open. I just love it. And you go over and you look at this fish, and you know the that they're studying and seeing, you know, how that might relate to someone with anemia problems. And I'm thinking, oh gosh, this is mind opening. And it's too bad I don't have another half century to be able to see what's going to happen. I think of my grandfather who passed away, and he had told me that he had lived in such a growing time in which he was riding in a horse and buggy, and then there was a man on the moon. Mm-hmm. In a way, that is what I see here in the changes. That going from a little country school and then seeing 50 years later the potential of this place and the beautiful things they have in the museum and the library. Oh! I don't want to say I would have died for anything, but the library was so much more comprehensive than we had.
Where was the library when you were here? Was it over in Signers Hall at that time?
Well, I don't remember, but it's
pretty sparse.
They didn't have the books I wanted. Now, you have to realize I'm the type of person that if I wanted to go to a library, I could go to the medical library at the University of Missouri. I could go to the law library at the University of Missouri. I could go to Ellis Hall, the regular library. I could say, okay, I want some, but they'll have to be with, like, the regular writing and then the translations, let's say, of some Assyrian book. And they could order it in for me. And so you would have your Assyrian and you would have your translations and you would, oh, well, okay. Whatever you wanted, you could get. And I wasn't a student there, but when you're a student in Missouri, you have access to any place. So I could go to St. Louis University and use their library. So I used all these libraries. I used the medical, I used the law, I used the Ellis one, and I used St. Louis universities. I also had a pass to go to the Assembly of God graduate students' library, and at any time of day or night, I could get into the building and go up and turn on the lights and use anything that they had. I had all the private colleges around, access to anything they had. And then working for the American Bible Society in being a consultant on the Old Testament project, world access. Anything I wanted to know, I could get from any country. So Australian scholars, French, German. I used to correspond with Pope Benedict before he was Pope Benedict. Yeah. And he would answer any questions. And all these people would send me copies and things of whatever they had that I could use worldwide. But this potential that we have today is out of this world almost. Mm-hmm. It really is. And that's what I see here, the growth.
That's wonderful.
It's just gives me a warm feeling.
That's great. Yeah.
And I'm so happy that these students have this place. They have this potential.
And have you managed to reconnect with some people that you knew when you were here?
I haven't. I mean, I just came up, and I've been involved with all the activities that you have had here.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we don't have the telephone books like we used to have, that you could just look at a person's name, and then you could find the number and call them. But the people I still know here are Neil Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And Neil Brown and Bill Stringer sent me, at the time that I was in grad school, a video of their work on the Aurora Borealis.
Mm.
So I did have that. And I would have liked to have touched bases with both of them. But I will mention them here so it's documented. I loved you guys. Okay. So I think, and then I actually have a distant relative that lives here. That when I was here, I did not know that she was even here. But when I was making that loop and they were having these little places that would go off to cabins, she and her family lived back in one of those. And this was my grandfather's older brother, Alexander Shuey,
mm-hmm.
his line that was living here in Alaska, and I did not know it.
Oh, isn't
that interesting? I did not know it. So,
yeah.
So I missed them, but
mm-hmm.
if I'd known they were here, I would have gone off and met them. Yeah, and I found that out. As a person ages, they want to know more about their roots. So I did genealogy of the family. Mm-hmm. My father had passed away. I did his, and my mother was looking at me doing it one day, and she said, "I'm still living.
Mm-hmm.
Do mine." And I said, "I am doing yours."
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
We've been going for about an hour and 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that we haven't touched on yet that you want to discuss?
No, I think this is fine, but I appreciate you giving me so much time.
Oh, any time. It's been a joy. Thank you. Yeah,
you have been a joy. Because you can't talk without an audience reactions, so you can see the face, the eyes,
mm-hmm.
the expression of the mouth of the other person opposite the camera. And it was a pleasure to view you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Susie. It's been wonderful.
Okay.